Good morning. It's called the Senate Education Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 5th, 2018. The time is 8:02 a.m. In attendance are myself, Stephen Schering, Senator Giesel, and Senator Begich. We expect Senator Coghill and Hughes in a bit. So we have a quorum to conduct business, and here we have Senator Hughes. Today we're going to resume consideration of HB 64 relating to a task force on reading and dyslexia. We heard this bill last on April 14th of 2017. This is the fourth time the bill has come before the committee. My intent today is to adopt and discuss the committee substitute, continue with public testimony on the bill, and if we can, move the bill on to its next committee referral. Any questions or comments from members of the committee before we start? Thank you. Let's bring up our sponsor, Representative Harry Drummond, or her staff, Patrick Fitzgerald. Is that right, Patrick? Thank you for being here. So it's been a while since we've heard this. Patrick, can you sort of briefly sum up what this bill does?
Absolutely. Good morning, Chair Stevens and members of the Senate Education Committee. My name is Patrick Fitzgerald. I'm staff of Representative Drummond, who is chairing her own education committee in the other body. So HB 64 is designed to assemble a task force with members from each body of the legislature, members of the public and nonprofits to strengthen reading proficiency and to find the best methods possible for teaching students with dyslexia. There are four goals to the task force, and among those goals, among other things, are to assemble the task force, to evaluate reading instruction practices for all public school students in the state, diagnose treatment and education for children affected by dyslexia, examine how current statutes and regulations affect reading proficiency outcomes, identify evidence-based, multi-sensory, direct, explicit, structured, and sequential approaches to instructing students affected by dyslexia. The task force will give a report of their findings and recommendations to the legislature at a set date, and that's the bill in a nutshell.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzgerald. Appreciate that. The briefness of that, we've heard it before. Any questions, Mr. Fitzgerald? Then we also have a CS before us, Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate Committee Substitute for the Committee Substitute for House Bill number 64, version 30LS0345/November before the committee as the working document.
Thank you, Senator Begich, and I'll object for purposes of discussion, and let's bring up Tim Lampkin to explain the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Before you is version N. I want to open with the fact that, as you know, Senator Stevens, my career with you, we've worked on quite a number of task forces together, and I have carefully gone through this bill and sort of restructured it to a better suit the mechanics of what works efficiently for the legislature. In summary, these changes, the most substantive changes that you'll see is that the overall bill was shortened a bit, starting with its title. It had a fairly lengthy title, and as you'll see in the CS, it was changed from the Task Force on Reading Proficiency and Reading Instruction for All Students and on the Effects of Dyslexia on Some Students to simply the Task Force on Reading Proficiency and Dyslexia. Other substance changes is that we made it a bit smaller, and that instead of having two reports, a preliminary and a final, that we just have one final report. So if we go through the detailed changes, if you wish.
Yes, would you?
Okay. Think? I've already indicated the first one with the title change. Also then on page 1, line 7, there was a correction, or rather an update, looking at the 2017 assessments, changed the number reference from 47,000 to 43,300. On page, under C there, page 1, lines 11 and 12, the statement results in student assessments demonstrate that the state can improve reading instruction for students was instead edited to read results in student assessments indicate that reading instruction and reading proficiency for students in the state should be improved. This, Mr. Chairman, was in the, just to give you context, what I had in my mind, the Moore case, and that seemed a bit, for lack of a better word, sort of accusatory, sort of admitting guilt that we're failing, I suppose. And so it just edited that a bit to sound a little more positive and less admission. Under D, a new subsection was added to read that under 5, parents and other caregivers are responsible for ensuring that their children learn to read through the public school system or other means of instruction. Again, this was the result of a prior task force that you and I worked on, that one of the recommendations included we really wrangled with parental involvement. And so this section here was a nod that it's not all just on the government and on our state and department and so forth, that there is a parental role in this process, and that was a way to recognize that. Under E, then that just is follow-up that mostly existing language that the D and E are connected, whereas first it's indicating that there is some parental involvement, but that the state and legislature is also held accountable for these things. And it just sort of, again, with the Moore case in mind, struck some extraneous language. Under F, page 2, lines 16 to 31, under the original version, it was a bit... It just needed to be reorganized. None of the duties have been changed. They've just been sort of restructured, rearranged a bit, just to be more efficiently structured in the bill. That's it, the long and short of it there. Otherwise, the duties themselves were kept intact. Under G, page 3, lines 13 to 18, again, the task force would have one final report over the course of about 1 year, as opposed to two reports, one interim, one final, over the course of about 2 years. And if any of you have served on task forces, it's just a matter of efficiency and getting the work done more quickly. And under H is perhaps one that may have the most discussion, but this is literally restructures and reduces the size of the task force from 15 to 12 members. This would first and foremost put leadership in the hands of the legislature, since even in the original bill it was stated that this is a legislative task force, and so therefore it was set up to be led by legislators. So three in the House, three in the Senate, that's not changed. There's one K through three third grade teacher on the board, that's the same from the original. There's one school board representative, the AASB, Alaska Association of School Boards. Under the original bill, that section, the school boards and the superintendents, the ACSA groups, were lumped together, either or, where they're really separate organizations. So I pulled out the administrators and put them in the next section, whereas they could be the administrators, the superintendents, essentially, or the principals. And they are, I don't have all the acronyms, but they have principals and school administrators, kind of all of a coalition group. So it was more appropriately housed in that section. So it could be either a principal or a superintendent. We then, moving down to the nonprofits, there were originally three, made that down to one. And in the nonprofit section, there was also reference to a parent. So again, I felt it was more appropriate to identify the nonprofits and the parents distinctly. So we can confirm that there's at least one parent and at least one nonprofit on the task force. And then finally, you'll see that a new section in the latest task force, Mr. Chairman, that we served on, as you may recall, affectionately, was our civics education task force. And one of the key recommendations of that task force was to begin to recognize the need for young leaders on these boards and commissions that we appoint around the state. And so that is a reflection of the last task force's recommendation to include a student leader on this task force. On the point there, I guess, of the task force itself, I'd like to mention that, as many of you know, these task forces are all about consensus building. And when folks may feel that they've been left out, so to speak, of course, if we were to include every stakeholder and every advocacy group on this subject, the task force would have hundreds of people on it, and rightly so, very appropriate advocacy. However, it's not practical for purposes of a task force getting its work done. It's all about consensus building, and there's nothing to preclude, for example, with this new structure of the task force, the omission of the Commissioner of Education and the University of Alaska, there's nothing to preclude them from participating in this process. In fact, there's every expectation that they will be called upon to show up at one of these hearings and could dedicate an entire hearing to a task force on their that particular subject or policy area. So there's nothing to preclude any of these groups, any nonprofit, any parent, any state organization from being in effect, subpoenaed to participate at one of these hearings. Page 4, lines 16 to 28, these sections were redrafted. Essentially, the legislative task force being led by it, instead of the chair being elected from amongst the 15 members, this chair would be appointed jointly by the Speaker and the President of the Senate, which has fairly common precedent. It works. We've done it before. I've done it a number of times. And it reflects and confirms that this will be under legislative control. Under 2, there was some reference to the frequency of meetings, that they couldn't meet more than 10 or less than 6 times, and some reference to potential conflicts of interest and recusing themselves and bringing an outside counsel to perhaps settle dispute. It wasn't clear to me, but that language was struck. Again, it was unusual language, and this is about consensus building. In my experience, it's been pretty rare, or at least uncommon, that there be that sort of fighting within a task force, and that granted, even with 12 members, at the end of the day, everyone tends to agree unanimously. And if or when there's the unlikely situation that a vote is necessary on some question and you invoke parliamentary procedure, well, a tie vote would mean that motion would fail. And so that shouldn't be a deal breaker in terms of having an even number of task force members or having it led by the legislature and striking references to conflicts of interest and that sort of thing. Under 3, the new version specifies that the staff of the chair of the task force would provide the administrative support for this effort, as opposed to the original language, which identified legislative members, plural, so potentially multiple staff involved, and again, problematic. So it was adjusted to more common standard language that we use for crafting these types of task forces. And then finally, under line 7, not quite finally, but lines 27, 28, regarding essentially the fiscal note. It's that members not being entitled to per diem or travel expenses, trying to keep these costs at a minimum. That's consistent with the original bill. However, the only main difference there is the original bill indicated that this task force shall meet telephonically. And it's perfectly conceivable, if not even potentially recommended, that a lot of these members on this task force could very well be in the Anchorage Bowl area. And so therefore, if it's possible for them to meet together, why not let them? Why, if they're all in Anchorage, would they have to sit in their offices and be on the phone? So we changed that from shall to may. Should not necessarily impact the fiscal note whatsoever. I think we all agree that we're trying to keep this cost to a bare minimum here. And then finally, the sunset, of course, was updated to June 30th of 2019. That, Mr. Chairman, concludes the changes of the CS. I'm happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lampkin. I appreciate all the efforts you put into this and the changes that we've recommended. I think it's going to be a really fine task force. I like the idea of face-to-face as much as possible. And having a student aboard, it's been my experience, that always helps things. I've never seen that not work very well. So any questions or comments? Yes, Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, unfortunately I have to leave, but I wanted to just say I really appreciate the improvements in this bill. Vastly improved it, made it much more expeditious in terms of functioning, and I think it will actually now be able to produce a product, which is critically needed. So I want to thank you for the changes, Mr. Chairman, and with that, I do need to step out.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. I appreciate your being here with us. Yes, Senator Begich.
Just a couple of questions. First, Tim, on your I-3, line 25-26, and the staffing issue, the way you're wording it, does that add cost to this particular piece of legislation, which I believe had a zero fiscal note before?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I believe legislative staff are on the payroll already, and so this would be just one of their duties that they would be assigned to, like any other project that may come along on a given day. If it's this type of work is above and beyond what they might normally do, it would perhaps be irrelevant because we're not paid overtime.
So, follow up?
Sure, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason I said that is it looked like it actually said legislative staff wouldn't do it, but that some other staff would do it. So you're suggesting when it says the task force staff will be the administrative support, you're suggesting then that it's an education committee staff person that will be identified somehow for sure as this. What I don't want is somebody to come back and say, you said we had staff, and so you guys have to pay for it. That's all I'm trying to get at here.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, thank you for the clarity. Again, it's a staff, one single staff member that would be on the staff of the legislator that's chairing the task force. That's, and whoever that is, that staff person would be assigned, as opposed to if it were multiple legislative members staff as originally, then you'd have multiple staff. Actually would cost, well, theoretically cost more or be more effort. So this, if anything, should reduce any potential.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. It really does clarify it for me, and we got it on the record now, so nobody would ever debate it. But the other question I have, and the last question I have, is just from you, Patrick, whether or not the sponsor is comfortable with the changes that are proposed in this committee substitute.
Patrick Fitzgerald, through the chair, to Senator Begich. Yes, she is.
Thank you, Senator Begich, and welcome, Senator Cockrell. Yes, Senator Diaz.
Thank you, and I just want to thank your staff, Mr. Chair. I think Tim did a great job cleaning this up, and it is much improved. I have a question I was curious to as far as the bill sponsor, but also the stakeholders who originally brought the idea and the people that are very excited about this bill, their sense as far as moving from the 2-year to the 1-year. And then a question, and I realize this is past the House, so we're getting close where it could pass in this body. So that March 29th date would, if things move quickly, would give them a whole year. But it also allows 3 months after that, the June 30th date. And if they needed more time, I'm just wondering whether, you know, why March 29th as opposed to May 30th or a little bit later, if you could explain that, please.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, thank you for that question. And again, in my own experience, this is definitely a hard date, but it's not a truly binding date. There's no penalty. It's not like they're going to go to jail or be fined if they miss that deadline. In fact, I can speak for my own failings, I suppose. with our last one of our task force reports, we were a little tardy getting it in, but we did submit it, but it wasn't on the official date that was stated originally. It's okay. We set that as a goal, and there shouldn't be any true penalties if they have to, if their work isn't done and they need the extra time, say to May 1st or even June 30th, to get the work done. But I would also, of course, have the advocates speak to that as well, of course, and they're available to come up here pretty quick.
Senator.
And as follow-up, they could do some sort of preliminary report to meet that and then have supplemental reports as well. There's nothing that would prevent that. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, that is correct. There's nothing to prevent them from having a preliminary report if they so choose.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. And we'll have Posey Box, I believe, online, and any others that may speak to that. Good question to ask them as well. So if no further questions, we'll move on to our public testimony. And Ms. Box, Posey Box, are you with us?
Yes, sir. I am.
Good morning, Ms. Box. Thanks for being with us. I know you've been very involved in this legislation. Any comments you have at this time?
Thank you. Good morning, Senator Stevens and the Senate Education members. For the record, my name is Posey Box. Thank you for the opportunity to support HB 64, and I'm testifying as a member of the Alaska Reading Coalition. Reading. We were never born to read. We invented reading, and it expanded the ways we think, and it altered the organization of our brains, which in turn led us to be the intelligent humans that we are. The ability to record history and learn from our past is possible because of this human invention. Reading came about because of the human brain's extraordinary ability to make new connections among its existing structures. Our reading brain is shaped by the actual experience of learning to read. A legislative task force created by HB 64 should result in consensus for a long-term statewide reading plan that is individualized to the needs of each district, school building, classroom, and individual teacher responsible for reading instruction. Legislators on this task force need to become experts in the reading brain, as Alaskans cannot afford the cost any longer of low reading proficiency. Legislators who are selected to sit on this task force should expect to be challenged. In 2017, the Education Consumer Foundation projected the cost of low third grade reading proficiency for four of our largest school districts. The cost is over $98 million. In essence, this subjects taxpayers and our state coffers to a hidden annual tax that accumulates or accumulates with each graduating class because of the increase in spending needed for welfare, health care, and public safety. And we multiply this by decades of reading failure in Alaska. And then we know that this burden is preventable simply by enhancing the knowledge of our educators. The Alaska Reading Coalition and parents like myself have taken steps to gain this knowledge about reading. But what we have found is that entrenched silos form tall barriers between the humanities field of education and the science field of reading instruction. We know that it will take time to make significant changes. Bottom line is our educators are not being prepared for the science of reading as undergraduates, nor are they getting enough professional development to bring this knowledge in. A reading plan needs to uniquely and flexibly support teachers and students and educators in their learning environment. And HB 64 is a vehicle that can start this process. We can build on this understanding. Recently, a well-oiled team of parents, teachers, a knowledgeable tutor, and technology brought a young student from kindergarten-level reading to achieving the second-grade reading goal in only, I think, about 8 months' time. We can, as a state, achieve reading proficiency for all of our children. Thank you, and I'm here to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Boggs. Appreciate all of your efforts in this area. Yes, Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you so much, Posey, for your passion and for highlighting the fact that reading proficiency is the key that unlocks the door for successful students. I'm just wondering if you have any concerns about the condensed time frame and the report, which would be March 2019. And then, Mr. Chair, I would have another question after that.
Yes, please. Ms. Boggs?
Thank you, Senator Stevens, through the chair, and Senator Hughes. We don't have concerns about the condensed timeline. We consider HB 64 the first step, and the first step can be short so that the other steps in this process of improving reading outcomes can happen. It's consensus building, it's educating everyone and going forward, and I think we can achieve that in the time allotted.
Thank you. Senator Hughes?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I had several parents contact me who are, I believe one of them at least is a homeschool parent, and just wondering what will be learned from this task force, how it might apply not just to those of our children in public schools, but the children who are making other choices as far as education and how it might be helpful to them. And then if you could also speak to what sparked this, because I actually had some folks concerned that there might be some common core roots to this, and I questioned that, and I actually called up the carrier or the sponsor of the Senate version of the bill, former Senator Dunleavy, who said there was no connection and that it was a good bill. So could you just speak to what sparked this bill and how it might apply to those who are choosing education choices outside the public schools?
Sure. Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, regarding homeschoolers, there are a lot of homeschoolers across the nation who are doing it because their children are not learning to read. And those, we would hope that the outcome of this bill is content rich so that anybody can understand the basics of what is needed for reading instruction, whether you're a homeschool family or you're a public school family or you're a private school family. The knowledge base is the same, and it just simply needs to be shared across the whole of Alaska. When we think about the Common Core, we are not happy about it in early reading instruction. It fails the kids who are struggling to learn to read. And I've got a wonderful article that I can submit for the record where it explicitly talks about how the Common Core it doesn't have enough of the foundational information that we need, and it doesn't tell us what to do when kids are struggling. So we're not fans of the Common Core. I will tell you how this all came about. It's pretty funny, but a fifth grade student of mine decided to go out and see Senator Dunleavy. And he, unbeknownst to me, I had no idea the family was going out there, and he marched into Senator Dunleavy's office and said something like, I just calculated that I've been in public school for 6,000 hours, and I could only read on a kindergarten level. And I've been with a specialist for 100 hours, and I'm now reading on a fifth grade level independently. And then he says, what's up with that? And he also shares that he wasn't worried about himself because he had his mom. But what are we going to do about all the other students that don't have his mom? So that's how it came about. It was quite spontaneous.
Yeah, great story. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have two others we've invited to testify. Serena Elfman Mullenkoff is a teacher. Serena, are you online?
Yes, I am right here.
Thank you. And please go ahead.
Okay. Good morning, Senate Education Committee members. My name is Serena Elfman Mullenkoff, and I am also testifying as a member of the Alaska Reading Coalition. When my daughter started school, I volunteered in her class two mornings a week. One of her classmates' mother told me of her panic when she came back from military service and saw her son struggling to learn the connection between sounds and letters. But she said that she trusted the school. Parents trust teachers even when their child is failing to learn early reading skills. The National Assessment of Educational Progress consistently finds that we teach only 30% of our Alaska kids to read proficiently. This teacher had excellent classroom management. This mom knew her son was safe and secure. This mom trusted her child's teacher. One day when I was volunteering, the children's assignment was to circle the pictures that started with the letter M. The teacher told me to help that particular child by pointing to the pictures for him to circle, giving him the answer. She did not know how to help this kid recognize when he said, M. She made a spur-of-the-moment decision a teacher makes countless times a day. What is best for the entire classroom? In this case, it was to put the child on her mental to-do list in hopes that she could get back to him. Too often, a teacher decides to deal with the kid's reading problem later, but most often these kids don't become readers later. The kindergarten teacher could have prepared the students for the M handout by drawing their attention to how they physically made the sound. Look at your friend's mouth. Watch how they make words that start with the letter M. Say math. Say milk. How are our friends making the sound? What do you feel when you say math? This teacher did not have the knowledge to do this, and she is not alone. After that, I went back to get my master's in reading science because my first teaching degree did not prepare me to teach reading adequately. When I was getting my original degree in elementary education, my group of pre-service teachers all kept waiting for when we'd be taught how to teach reading. And then at one point, a head professor loudly dismissed an Ohio reading law. None of us college students knew this law. The head professor waved a copy of the phonetics page of the dictionary, passionately declaring, "This is all that scientists say you need to teach reading." The professor thought she was defending us from the science of reading. This is a common concern in schools of education. If I had stayed under her protection, I too would have done what that kindergarten teacher did. I would have just had to hope that someone else later would get around to teaching that child to read. How tragic that this professor stood in the way of teachers knowing more about teaching reading. House Bill 64 must address how to ensure that teachers are supported in learning the science of reading. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Sir Renega. Thank you for your efforts. We also have Mary, unless there are questions, we have Mary Claire Kretschmar, who's a parent. She's also a member of the Alaska Reading Coalition. Mary Claire, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Senate Education members. And for the record, my name is Mary Claire Kretschmar. I appreciate this opportunity to support House Bill 64. I am the mother of a bright and engaged ninth grade student who in first grade exhibited reading difficulties. Intervention by her teachers did not result in significant improvement. She was actually falling farther behind. In third grade, she was diagnosed with dyslexia. However, her teachers were not allowed to use the word dyslexia in spite of her diagnosis. My daughter was placed in a special education class, but it did not teach her how to read. Why? No one could show me independent third-party research for the dyslexic intervention used in her special ed class. My daughter was not being provided with appropriate remediation. She was not making progress at all. I just wanted my daughter to be taught how to read. My concerns were ignored, my questions evaded. Meanwhile, she was falling farther behind. As she advanced to the intermediate primary grades, she was expected to read to learn instead of learning to read. Ultimately, I sought support outside the school district and had to pay for private tutoring to teach my daughter to read. The process of learning to read is no longer theory-based. It is scientific. I've learned that higher education in the nation has resisted the science of the process of learning to read. Academically speaking, education is a humanities, a theory-based field, so it's not surprising that our teachers have not kept current on the reading science via professional development and pre-service preparation. I am grateful for my daughter's progress and growth. She has learned how to read. She now has the skills to succeed as a student and ultimately to succeed in life. Great news, right? Yes. Yes, it is. Now my question is, what about all the other students in the state who need to be taught how to read, whether they're dyslexic, whether they live in poverty or with trauma, or English learners? Who are their advocates? Reading is a fundamental expectation of an education. Reading proficiency levels are the playing level, the playing field for all. Those that can read will have a much greater chance of success than those who cannot. The urgency of improvement cannot be stressed enough. Our kids are already failing. Those who cannot read will be doomed to a struggle of having to compete for jobs with a huge handicap, poor literacy skills. Ladies and gentlemen, please pass House Bill 64 now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Claire. Questions, Mary Claire? Yes, Senator Hughes.
Mary Claire, thank you for your powerful and passionate testimony, which included some of your personal experience with your daughter. I'm wondering, do districts now acknowledge dyslexia? And do you know of the 43,000 students that are not reading proficient, how many of those, or an estimate of how many of those have dyslexia?
Thank you, Senator Hughes, through the chair. No, to my knowledge, our local school district here in Anchorage still does not acknowledge dyslexia and does not use the word. I have been at meetings where teachers and administration officials have said, we're not using the D word. And I looked at them, and I was pretty amazed that a professional would resort to that. As far as the percentage of students, school-age students who do not have reading proficiency and may be dyslexic, I would guesstimate about 70%.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. So we have now gotten through the invited testimony. There are several other folks that wish to testify, and I'd be glad to hear them. I'd just like to point out, though, just in terms of the time we have about 10, 15 minutes left. And if we don't get through the testimony and get this bill out, it'll come out later than this at some future date. So I'd encourage you to keep your comments brief if you can, but want to hear what you have to say. So let's go to, we have Tara Kine here from, she's at Anchor Point, Offnet. Tara, can you hear me?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Tara. Please
go ahead. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Tara Kane, and I'm testifying as a parent on HB 64. I live in Anchor Point on the Kenai Peninsula, and I'm the mother of a 12-year-old dyslexic son who is in 7th grade at my local public school. He's always struggled with reading and writing. The school didn't test my son for dyslexia, even when I brought up the possibility of him having it over the past couple of years. So last summer, I got him independently tested myself at a language clinic in Anchorage. And in school, he was testing out in the 6th grade at the 1 percentile for reading. In August of last year, at the beginning of the school year, when I told the school that my son was clinically diagnosed with dyslexia, they tried to see what they could do. They're trying to help my son, but they don't really seem to understand dyslexia. They don't really seem to have any teaching tools specifically for dyslexic students. And none of the teachers are familiar with dyslexia, which is surprising to me because stats I've heard, it could be as many as 20% of students that have dyslexia. Because the school is not set up for dyslexic students, I have my son, what I did was I began tutoring him at home for 2 hours a week and for about the past 4 months, and he just tested out at the 38th percentile for reading. Many other students I know are not getting the help that they need, and I really would like to see the state take a proactive approach to help other struggling readers and writers like my son throughout Alaska. And I'm asking that you please pass HB 64.
Thank you very much for your comments, Tara, and congratulations on your efforts there. Let's move on then to Aaron McKay. He's also with the Alaska Reading Coalition. Aaron, is it Ms. McKay?
Good morning, Senate Education Committee members. Senator Stevens, for the record, my name is Aaron McKay. Thank you for the opportunity to support House Bill 64. I'm testifying as a member of the Alaska Reading Coalition and a parent. I just want to briefly stay in here to support this bill. My story is very similar to the other parents that talked. My daughter's dyslexic. I can confirm that as of last week, the school district still would not acknowledge the existence of dyslexia. And I ask you to pass the bill.
Thank you very much, Aaron, for your comments. Jennifer Moeller, I believe, is here in the room. Is that right, Jennifer, if you'd come forward? If you want to. Okay, you don't want to testify. Okay, very good. Thank you very much, Jennifer. Jennifer. And now we also have another Jennifer, Jennifer Hall-Jones, Alaska Reading Coalition. Ms. Jones.
Thank you. Good morning, Senator Stevens and Senator Education members. For the record, my name is Jennifer Hall-Jones. Thank you for holding this hearing and inviting testimony. I am in support of HB 64. I am from IDA Alaska and part of the Alaska Reading Coalition. I live in Anchorage, and my children have been educated in the public schools. I support House Bill 64 to create a task force that will help our leadership better understand the depth and scope of the problem so that an effective plan can be devised to help raise reading proficiency in our state. As a parent of a child with reading difficulties, I have firsthand knowledge of the devastating effects of inadequate reading instruction from well-meaning teachers who are unable to deliver the needed dosage of practice with phonological, phonemic awareness, and rapid automatic naming. Thus, as a fifth grader, my son's written expression resembled a second grader. And without securing outside help to learn to read and spell, he would not have graduated from school. I am delighted that the legislature is considering addressing this issue in the form of a task force. Since our state has some of the highest rates of non-proficient readers in the nation, and the educational infrastructure is complex and ingrained, I believe both legislative and regulatory approaches can collectively solve this problem, just as other states have. Let us support our teachers and their charges with evidence-based instructional strategies that help all of our children learn to read, because research shows that good reading instruction changes reading outcomes for both special education and general education students. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Any questions or any further testimony to come before us? Senator Hughes.
I actually have a comment, and I'm just wondering, for one thing, I really appreciate all the testimony from these parents, and I hope that that model of parent engagement will be part of the, not just part of the task force, but actually part of the solutions that are implemented as a result of the task force. And was just curious, and maybe you know, Senator Stevens, or maybe someone can speak to whether these children are struggling, whether it's often hereditary, and mom and or dad also are struggling to read, and this family engagement piece is huge, including for reading, but for overall education. And I'm just wondering if, as we find a key to unlock opportunities and successes for kids, whether we might, as we bring parents in, might be able to help a parent who might be struggling to read. That's, you know, it's been a hidden thing. You hear stories of someone who's been able to keep that camouflage their whole life, and whether that, if anyone is aware of any connection there. And that could be answered offline. I'm just real curious about it.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes. Senator Hughes, very important question, and I believe there are a lot of folks that in our society that are functioning and simply have covered up that inability to read. Ms. Boggs, do you have any reaction or response to the question of Senator Hughes?
Thank you, Senator Hughes, through the chair. Absolutely, people who struggle with reading, there's a genetic component. If one parent has struggles, 50% chance for each child to have struggles. If two parents happen to marry and they have struggles in reading, 87% each child, individual child, has that risk level of struggling. Thank you.
Wow, that's shocking, 87%. Thank you very much, Ms. Boggs. So, yes, Senator Baggage, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick comment. We had said we wanted to connect this stuff to the education challenge whenever we have a bill and those kinds of things. So I just wanted to say that in the second recommendation of the Amplify Student Learning group, where they talk about measure to mitigate underperformance and accelerate student performance. This fits right into it, so it's consistent with state education policy as determined by that effort. So I wanted to just put that on the record.
Thank you, Senator Pankaj. At this point, is anyone from the department here that wishes to speak? I don't see anybody, but I'm sure it fits right in. It does fit right in. And if there's no further testimony, we'll then close the public testimony. And I'd like to point out that written testimony can still be submitted to the committee by emailing SenateEducationCommittee@AKLEG.gov, SenateEducationCommittee@AKLEG.gov. Any further discussion or comments on the bill? And the will of the committee, Senator Cargill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, listening to testimony, looking at this, I appreciate this. This is just one tool, though, and so that would be my comment. I think I'll be looking forward to some of the comments on this. With that, I move that the Senate Education Committee move the end version of House Bill 64 from committee with individual recommendations and with a zero fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator. If there's no objection, we'll take a brief at ease. Okay, if this committee would come back to order, please. Our next meeting is a joint meeting with House Education Committee, Wednesday, February 7, 2018, 8 a.m., room 106. We'll be hearing from University of Alaska President Dr. Jim Johnson about K-12 and university partnerships and also about administrative cost efficiencies. Note there's a change in rooms here. If there's no further business to come before us, we are adjourned at 8:50.